the Arabic calligraphy equivalent of like jumping in the middle of a football field for no reason and like fist bumping the air and freezing mid.
So, the hall, la 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 la,
la 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 la, la 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 la, the hall. But also, just killing people that you don't understand isn't good. Which means there's something on the bear tribe, but there's also something on the Nordic. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that part of this. And that's not my shocked moment, but it's certainly something that I wanted to address.
Right.
But
they're going through these caves, and they come across an underground waterfall.
Let's call it the convenient waterfall.
Right. Because they see that if they were to go down and around, they would be hitting a lot of people, and then they would everybody behind them would be coming forward or be hitting them as well. So they secure a rope, and then they swing over into the waterfall because that's where it's making a lot of noise.
Ahmed does not like climbing. He is afraid of heights. But hey, everyone in the party is an excellent climber, and they all swing with a little drama across to another ledge. And
on then, a wet cliffside.
While it's, and then nobody at the bottom of the cliff looks, nobody looks up.
Yeah.
They're all chanting, but like there's some guys to the left who could have looked up, mm-hmm. but whatever. They make it all the way down into the pool. No one looks down at the pool. Nobody looks to the other side of the room, up or down.
Daryl, I'd really like to go ahead and just like look at the majesty of this waterfall.
No, keep chanting and bear.
But it's just such a pretty.
No, I just want you to focus in chanting and bear.
What if
Kevin chant and bear, and then it, all the closed captions is just like chanting, and it's like,
yeah,
it doesn't sound like anything except for like the, you know, mono humming of the thing, and then there's like 11 guys swimming with knives in their teeth across the one pool in the room. Give me a break of that Kit Kat bar.
So they eventually come up to an area that's really deep into the cave. They see some other bear people chanting. And so they come up from the water and they, you know, attack them because they're getting close to the very area where the matriarch of this tribe is.
Yeah, the head priestess. And my notes are like, who are they going to kill? Oh, all of them.
Yeah.
They've been instructed to kill two people.
Yeah.
But they're going to kill all of them.
Right. And as they're like going through this battle, the translator tells the leader to go ahead and go in there and they'll fight him off. And
they send him alone into the part of the cavern that has the head priestess. Alone.
And they don't know if she's well guarded. I think that they're assuming that this is her guard. And they're just like, they're not wanting to go in there because it's so sacred and holy. But even still, there's nothing to suggest that there are more people in there who are guarding her,
mm-hmm.
outside of one guy.
I have some Sean facts about the matriarch, if we're ready to talk about that. So in accordance with the book, Michael Crichton's book, John McTiernan's version of the Wendell's mother was an old woman played by veteran actress Susan Willis. And when Michael Crichton took over and did the reshoots, he decided that brutally killing off an old lady didn't reflect very well on the heroes. So Crichton decided to make her younger, sleeker, and tougher. And in the final release, Wendell's mother is played by Kristen Cloak, uncredited, but the final credits still list Susan Willis as the Wendell's mother.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, my big thing about her is and I didn't think of it, I was trying really hard to think of the type of snake. She looks like she has a coral snake around her. And I don't know, I don't think coral snakes are native to the Netherlands of any place.
May I quote a line from another movie that was based off of a Michael Crichton book?
No. And by no, I mean yes, please.
So in Jurassic Park, the Ellie Sattler quotes something like, there are plants in here that are poisonous. You pick them because they looked good. That's what the snake reminds me of. They picked it because it looked good.
It did look really good, but I was instantly like,
yeah, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. Like, why should she have a snake around her at all? She loves bears. She should have a bear cub near her.
100% yes. That puppet would have looked terrible. Or that CGI bear would have looked amazingly terrible. But like the coral snake, I'm like,
mm-hmm.
It's what made me think of the snakes, by the way, being driven out.
She could have been, maybe that's what they were. I mean, I'm not going to give that movie too much credit.
Yeah, I don't think they were that deep about it.
Yeah. But she could have been holding a tarantula in her hand when he came in, and it still would have been very scary. It wouldn't have been nearly as noticeable, but, you know.
I don't think tarantulas are native to Disney.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
So she could have got it from Ahmed, but that would have had been a whole different twist of the film. All right.
They were trying to make the point that she was, what is it when you drain the snake? Like, she was...
That's
she
when
was,
you take a piss, Jen.
No, when you actually get the...
the venom from the snake?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Called milking a snake.
Okay. Just wanted to know.
But milking the snake.
Doesn't sound much better, does it?
No, it doesn't, Jen. I was going to introduce you to a really cool segment I made up. but now you don't get it. Now you have to talk about draining your snake and milking your snake respectively.
She has a bowl of poison that she dips a claw into.
It's very essential to this scene.
Yeah, because they fight, they scuffle. She, like, you know, makes some really good parries and catches him with her poison claw.
Yeah, and as she kind of thrusts past him and he parries, but she catches him in the side. And then he spins around and cuts her head off and it hits the floor. It's very satisfying. Mm-hmm. I would give it a 7 out of 10 for decapitation in a film mm-hmm. that we've seen so far or ever.
Right.
You're like, that's not believable, but I liked it.
Right.
Which is a 7 out of 10. 9 out of 10 is believable or better.
Right.
Okay, so you don't deserve it, but I'm going to tell you about my new segment called Let Me Explain. Are you ready? I've always liked the idea of fighting in a hallway in a cavern or a castle or whatever with a like insurmountable horde. Let me explain. Okay, so I don't think I could take probably more than, and this is if I was really good, I probably couldn't take more than 50 to 100 people, even if I had a really good weapon and I was fully charged, like after a long rest or something, right? But if I killed that many people in a hallway, they would stack up and eventually fill the hallway, impeding my further pursuers, right? And if there was a wall of dead bodies stacked up, whoever came behind them would have to spend the time to hack up the bodies in front of them in order to scramble over them, also coating them in gore, which would make them even slippery, so they wouldn't have that much traction as they pursued me in the future, and I would be able to get away.
All right, so in this scenario, in this segment,
yeah, let me explain.
Is this the kind of segment where you're like you are Naomi as you are right now, or is it more of like Naomi as your D&D character? Because here's the thing about, like, I like the idea, I really do. Uh-huh. Let me poke holes in your explanation, because. I mean, depending on the size of the opening, uh-huh. like let's say that we were going to go ahead and fill up
a human corridor,
we're going to fill that up. We're going to block that. Uh-huh. And you have like another escape out of here. Totally understand that.
Uh-huh.
You're going to have to, I mean, I guess the only way that it could actually work is if bodies like started piling up and you're like slashing at them and then they're like getting on top of each other.
Yep.
I mean, what's going to stop them from pulling those dead bodies out from underneath so that it doesn't fully fill up?
I'm going to say blind rage.
Okay.
I just think that the idea is pursuit on their side. Mm-hmm. And you see them clamber over dead bodies in front of them. But as it gets higher, they're going to trip. And then eventually, as they trip, they're going to have to climb. As they have to climb, they're going to be prostrate. And as they're prostrate, I'm just going to stab them in the eye hole. Because my idea is, I mean, we could pull out any number of the half-fledged D&D characters that I've played over the number of years. But in this specific, and in most movies, I put myself in the protagonist situation. So I'm thinking like a sword, a broadsword, mm-hmm. or a scimitar, or right. a dagger, which all of these people have. So if I would slash down the first few and mm-hmm. then maybe switch to dagger, because you just need eye hole. And then they just, you get to like 5-inch gap or less, and then you just grab what you want and go.
I guess I feel like it's not fully realistic because of the fact that
this situation is realistic.
Okay. Well, you know, as talking to the person who coined the phrase, this is where the science breaks down for me, in your explanation, like, I feel like if they're like, they would have to literally be like blind rage in order to be like, oh, yeah, let me just like, you know, come through here and, you know, get at you. Like, I'm thinking the only way that it would actually be able to work mm-hmm. to a place where it's going to be more effective, because like stabbing, it can be pretty dangerous. It can be pretty lethal, but people can still like move, like depending on where they're stabbed.
Yeah. So that's not a foolproof plan.
Right. My thinking is like if you had like a fireball that, or like a fire spell where it was just like this tunnel of fire that you like force through the tunnel as this like 50 some odd group is there, uh-huh. then you have like a lot of people in there who are just like, you know, now burnt corpses. And then that's when the piling up starts.
I'm with you for that. If that was an ability that I had.
Right.
But there's no magic in this film.
You know, if the zombie apocalypse or if we get to the point where we have to kill others in a hallway, then I would love for that to work for you. I really would. I would hate to see you get killed by a horde.
I would let you be behind me as I start trying. Okay. I'd be like, it would turn from let me explain to let me try this. Yeah.
I would be like, okay. I would like to think that my weapon of choice would be like a bow and arrow. So like I like ranged weaponry.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely feel like you're a ranger in a lot of ways. What did you call yourself early? A barbarian ranger? Barbarian ranger?
I mean, yeah.
My way doesn't seem very sportsmanlike. Why don't I put down my rock? You don't put down your sword and we'll kill each other like
God intended. Yeah, I called myself a barbarian earlier, but I think like realistically, unless I had like a solid year training with a sword, I would do better with like aiming. But like I've never even picked up a bow and arrow. These are not fighting hands.
See the floppy wrist thing she just did. Okay. So the party. Okay, let's jump back in. The party knows that Vito King Bayo.
He comes back out of killing the lady, and then they kind of like go down further into the passage following the river, hoping that it'll eventually get out, but it doesn't. It goes underneath the rocks, and then the leader just sort of collapses. And so
as he collapses, he goes, I'm all right.
The translator is like, it's okay, we'll just take them two at a time and then we'll like we'll rest. And I'm like, that's not gonna work, dude.
And then they hear thunder, right? And the translator goes, oh no, Van Gogh go says, oh, on top of this, it's going to rain. And then Antonio, who's standing at the entrance, is like, it's going to rain. It's going to rain. It's going to rain. And then Mullet guy, who was the guy at the gong, was just like, hey!
Sorry. Sometimes you got the thunder cliffs.
Yeah, the thunder from the thunder cliffs. We must be near the ocean now. Mm-hmm. So then they're like, okay, so we're going to dive into the water, dive under the thing, swim out to sea, and escape. Perfect plan.
Right.
So they all drop everything, all of their riches in the whole of the world, because again, and I cannot say this enough, swords are expensive, and maybe you don't grind down a gift sword into a scimitar without talking to somebody first. But also, whatever. They all decide to dive in. And the last two to go are Banderas and Interpreter Guy. And Interpreter Guy's like, hey, guess what? If they don't follow us, it means we're not going to escape. And then... they'll know there's no escape.
Yeah.
So they dive under the rock, and that's when my timer started.
Right. And so they're like going through this underground passage, and they had like for like over a minute, they're just holding their breath, and then they come out through the other side and there's light, and then they start like making their way up, and then they all just sort of like sploosh up.
There's light throughout that entire cave. Yeah. They can see the entire way. Like in scarier movies where like boats capsize and like Titanic and stuff, like things go pitch black and you're like, oh no.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there's like something lighting up this underground tunnel the entire time. They are down there for 1 minute and nearly 6 seconds. And at my best, before I became old, my best non-stressed vacation breath-holding time was about a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Not having been stabbed, not having been poisoned, not being pursued by a bear tribe, not having battled for 2 days straight. Not having had Nookie with a beautiful blonde-haired woman.
Right.
Like, yeah, sure, I'm sure. He had his whole breath.
Yeah.
The whole time.
You're not alone. Interpreter, actor, character's name, I think, is Herger. He almost drowned in that scene.
Yeah, that scans.
I hate that.
So, back at the house.
At the Great Hall.
They know, like, leader guy is getting tended to, and he's like, I'm gonna die at some point, probably because of this wound. And so they know that because they only killed the lady and they didn't kill the dude, it's one of those things where they know that this guy is gonna be coming up.
The
horn guy.
Yeah, the power horned guy is coming. But also the king is like, okay, so they have this kind of moment of rest. This is before they just start discussing what's going to happen next. And hey, plotters, I only got two more pages of notes, so we're going to rush through this probably real good.
Yeah.
Okay, so Vlad, Beowulf, Buldavir, receding hairline, Nordic guy.
Right.
He's like, I'm going to be buried as a pauper. And then Crazy King, who we don't know, but probably just Geriatric King, is like, he pulls out a fancy sword and puts it in his hands. And he's like, you shall be buried as a king. And then, because when you're on your deathbed, ask for whatever the f*** you want. You're dying anyway. And so he goes, you know, a person might be thought to be quite wealthy if someone wrote down their story.
Mm-hmm.
And then Banderas looks up and he's like, blink, 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 blink. Because he's doing a really great Tom Hanks, like a young Tom Hanks impression. And he's just like, a man might be thought wealthy indeed. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to write a story.
And so they get ready for one last stand. And
at this point in my notes, I'm still really convinced that it's Wiglaf. The notes.
I know.
The notes are damning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm wrong. Wiglaf is long gone.
Yeah, he just like picked up and left like the president in The Last Starfighter as soon as his son showed up. Anyways, not the point.
So they walk outside. Banderas is like, he's walking his final walk to the whatever. And translator's like, something I don't remember dialogue. And then Banderas is like, oh no, translator says, you should get some rest. Banderas says, I'm not tired. Mm-hmm. And then he's just like, well, you should rest anyway. He's like, because we're going to have to fight soon. And Banderas is like, I don't think we're going to have to fight. Because I don't think there's going to be any bong. Mm-hmm. It's the fog alarm. And then Banderas goes, fog?
And so the fog starts rolling in. And it starts raining. So they don't have to worry about the fire.
The translator guy says it.
Yeah.
It is like, we're not all like, oh, it's raining. Good job. it's not raining. Good job. It's raining. Good job. He's like, it's raining. We won't have to worry about fires.
Yeah. But they still see like hundreds of people just sort of like come in, come up close.
It's a montage, like a preparation montage.
Right. But they also see a bunch of these guys on horses. And this is when my notes go, where are they getting and keeping and tending all of these horses? Because they were living in a cave last we saw them.
You're not wrong. But also we have during the montage, the hot blonde and Banderas make eye contact for a prolonged second and then it's done.
Yeah. And she goes down into like the basement of the hall. And that's when the queen gives her the daggers and says, make sure that they don't take them. And it's like implied that she's going to have to kill these women and children if they breach the hall.
And so all of the speech guy or Van Gogh says, oh, look at all these demoralized guys. They are like ready to run. Like these guys are in it bad. And so like my notes go speech, 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 speech. No speech. Right. What happens is Banderas walks away. Ahmed walks away and he prepares himself to pray to Allah. And so he takes off his. I maybe should have Googled it, but I also don't want to speak out of turn. So in the movie itself, he takes off his armor. He takes off his shoes and he kneels on the ground. And in other depictions I've seen of people and in real life, when I've witnessed other people in the act of worship of Allah, they often have a mat, but I frequently take off their shoes, if not always. So in depictions I've seen of people worshiping Allah, this is not uncommon. You would take off extraneous pieces of clothing. Certainly, I can't imagine you wearing like a weapon. And the most compelling component is that it is a act of submission. So the person being forehead to the ground, the person whose hands shielding their forehead towards the ground, like they are vulnerable. And to be the 13th warrior, someone who has gone on this prolific journey, who has fought and fought and fought, is taking this vulnerable stance to be open to God's intention for their life, I think is actually very beautiful. And despite the fact that one might take umbrage, and we might have already done that, towards a person who is not Muslim depicting someone of the faith in a film that is just abstract from that culture entirely, I think that Antonio does a decent job from my, albeit probably pretty ignorant perspective. I mean, I, it as a person who worships, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I get it. He's coming before his Lord. And even if I don't know the Lord as he knows the Lord, and maybe Antonio doesn't know the Lord as a Muslim would understand the Lord, I saw it as pretty gripping, I think, as far as this movie can throw a stone. Like, I think they did a pretty good job. And so as he prays, and it's not the speech I kind of wanted like a scene ago, he puts himself before the Lord and asks for, if he can't have done everything he wanted to in his life, if he could just be brave in these next few moments of it. He wants to end well. And that's something a pastor of ours used to say, is I want to end well. And that is something I would really like. Like, we're all crappy human beings. We talk about that a lot. Maybe our podcast is called Shocked and Applaud because we wax and wane, right? But to end well is a really fantastic thing. And so he stands up and we're like, okay. And now he's like, all right, getting ready for war. Do you know where we are now?
Yeah, this is where the leader comes down, and he you see him like struggling with walking, and he walks down to where the fighters are.
Yeah, you're like, this dying king stumbles out of his deathbed, like literally off of his deathbed, and he's got to go be with his men. He's going to go face a battle.
This is going to be the last battle as he knows it. And so he goes ahead and he just like stands in front of them as this horde is just coming towards him. And he starts saying the prayer that we hear the group saying when his father was put onto the boat and it was burned up.
It was the prayer of the blonde lady. Right. She says something akin to, I see my father and mother and brothers and sisters in front of me, and they beckon to me to come stand in my place alongside them. And I'm screwing this up, and maybe Sean will fix me. But that's fine. They're like, and we shall stand by side together in Valhalla, where the victorious will like
live
forever.
And as he's saying this speech, more and more people come through.
Yes.
And like on the very last line, or the very last word, we hear Antonio Banderas say, forever.
To himself, in this, like, he's with them. There's this solidarity with them. He may not believe the same thing, but they are opening their hearts to this destiny that they've reiterated about their woven fabric and their decided fate. Like, good, bad, they're fighting for honor.
You see the horde coming towards them, and they're all on these horses, which is like, oh, they're going to take care of the horses. But they go ahead, and that's when the battle starts, and like they're chomping at the horses. And
my notes are like, are they 300-ing this right now? is that how you felt? Like, I was like, I really don't remember the ending of this movie. Like, what is going to happen?
Well, they pretty much just have this battle, and like, you know, there's like, it's pretty anticlimactic considering.
Okay. But remember when we were watching it together just now?
Yeah.
How many times do you think I screamed at falling horses?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I can't with these falling horses. Like a 700-pound, and I don't remember how much a horse actually weighs, but I assume it's something like 1,000 pounds.
Right.
But a 1,000-pound animal cannot throw itself to the ground and not get hurt very much, right? Like, that can't be a thing. I'm going to admit it twice on this podcast this time. Like 200 pounds. If I throw myself to the ground, it hurts.
Yeah.
Like, I'm of the age where I throw myself at the ground and people are like, oh.
Right.
They're not like, ha, 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 ha. They're like, oh.
Are you going to be able to get back up?
I don't think so.
Not without help. Yeah. And like, but there's also, but it's like this big, it's supposed to be this big, like, scene, this big battle. And we see like all these different people like coming in.
Yeah.
And
okay. I will say that the scimitar that
Ahmed,
my brain keeps going Abed from Community, and it's not on purpose.
Yeah.
Okay. Ahmed uses the scimitar as a stabbing weapon, and although it has a sharp point-ish, it is a slashing weapon. And I feel like knife people would want me to say that out loud for them. But whatever. So whereas our king gets slashed, when he turns around, he managed to slash Powerhorn guy.
Yeah, Powerhorn guy is like riding, and the leader kind of like gets his sword ready, and as the guy's riding over to him on his horse, King just like misses the horse and like gets the guy in his stomach and throws Horn Power guy off.
He falls back real good.
Yeah, and then they have like the other Bear Tribe people coming in and hitting the king like as they're sweeping by with their horses.
Yes, but as Horn guy guy falls, you hear a trumpet sound. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't know who was the lookout, who has the horn. None of that is important. But the second horn guy goes down, we're like, retreat!
Well, because like he knocks him off of his horse and then they fight a little bit and then he gets, and then horn guy gets knocked down mm-hmm. again. And that's when the king, like, you know, stabs him with his sword yeah. and he just like chunks it in him.
Yeah, he real dead. And yeah. so whoever's the lookout is just like, we done. Hey guys, yeah. pack it up, take your ball, go home.
Yeah. And then the lady was right. They just had to kill the leaders of the tribe and then the tribe just was no more. Which is like so much like fantasy. It's kind of, there's this fantasy trope of like killing like the one big bad and then all of the other baddies like fall down. Like, you know, in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, like we ain't still tracking down Nazis and killing them now.
Right.
Okay, we don't kill them so much as send them to jail these days. But like there was a time way after Hitler died.
Well, they got held accountable for their actions.
Most of them.
Yeah.
We will. Not that this guy was Hitler. Yeah.
Sean would like it noted that the Wendell leader was not originally in there. Studio execs said, well, we really need to have a battle. We have to have a battle with Beowulf, not Beowulf, at the end.
There were, I would estimate, two more battles than they needed for this.
So really, all they did was add a couple of additional little things where, like, the Wendell leader is running out in front of the rest of the Wendells.
He's got that weird swinging, calling his troops sort of thing. It looks exactly like when Antonio throws the food to the guy in the tree. He's just like, wee, 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 wee. Like, if you had one of those tubes, remember, from back in the day, that would be like, yeah. I can't make the noise. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, though, that wee noise.
Yeah, you would swing it above your head and it would like make a sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vaguely, very vaguely.
I bet Sean could find the sound for it. I don't want to sign Sean anything, but like I feel like he would know what the hell that's called because it's not a vizuvavu, not like the blowy yeah. thing from a million years ago, but like it's this weird swingy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's whatever. The similar sound to what Ace of Base uses in that All That She Wants. Yeah.
All that she wants is another Viking. Don't stab your babies. And all that she wants is another Viking.
Yes.
But if you preach, you stab your babies.
Yes.
So, okay. Horn. So I was like, Viggo's still alive at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he walks his over to a chair and then he just sort of sits down.
And everybody's like, yes, yes, yeah. We're doing so well right now.
Right. And they all like are congratulating themselves like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the dog barks. And they all walk over and they're like, hey, King Viggo. What's up, Beowulf?
And he's just like dead.
And he's like half smirking off in the direction of the retreating horde. And you have to admit, to watch your enemies retreat from you is probably not the worst last view you could have.
Right. So he's sitting there dead. Like his head is like so upright.
He looks real alive.
He does.
He's not breathing. Like you can tell he's dead, but like it's like, huh?
Yeah.
And then we cut to the shoreline.
Yeah.
And it's just like translator guy is standing there as Antonio's on a boat and he was putting on his like old headdress with all the beads on it. Headdress, I mean like head covering. Mm-hmm. And he's just like back to Arabia or Turkey or Tartar or
wherever.
And he's just like, hey, have a good journey. I'll miss you. But I will pray to my gods for you because you only need one, because they understand each other culturally now because this movie is real big on cultural sensitivity. And then he's just like, but we have so many gods. I will pray them all. I will pray to them all for you. But don't be offended. And he's like, oh, and he waves at him. And then he does this beautiful, like, kiss his fingers, kiss his forehead sort of, like, gesture, which I'm not terribly familiar with, but it seems very Arabic and, like, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I didn't research every hand gesture, but I don't think they did either. And then he's like, goodbye. Northman.
Yeah.
To himself. Not even loud enough for a guy whose name I still don't know. To fade into the background as it cuts to another scene where he's writing in Arabic, right? Mm-hmm. And he's just like, and so.
The moral of the story is
a foreign man came to a foreign land and helped defeat a mighty foe, and a king was honored, and it was all in the name of God.
That year at summer camp, I finally learned how to be a man.
It was like the Arabic calligraphy equivalent of like jumping in the middle of a football field for no reason and like fist bumping the air and freezing mid.
The hall, la 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 la,
la 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 la, la 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 la. That's all you, Jen. That was you. Oh my God. Okay. Oh, but do you remember what the last line was? Ish, the last line.
Please tell me. Because you remember the lines from this movie that my brain just like threw out of my head.
He says, just before he like signs off and gives it all to God, right? He goes, and it all helped because... I hate it so much. He goes, and it all helped me become a man. Really? Oh, man. Did it? Do you feel manly now? Got boned in the hay, killed a whole bunch of people. You're like 35.
Mm-hmm.
Bro. And that's when it cuts to the unclimactic. There's nothing in the credits that I can see.
Yeah, there really isn't anything else after that.
You wanna Sean fax us at all right now?
So as we described, this is based off of a book by Michael Crichton. The book is Eaters of the Dead. It's become one of the most notorious hoaxes in librarianship circles. The Ahmad Tusi manuscript, which the bibliography says is the novel's source, so novel claims that there's a bibliography and that bibliography is based on the Ahmad Tusi manuscript, that's completely made up.
You mean the ADA, AMA... it's been a long time since college, but like the accreditation that you put in a book?
Yeah.
A book report or whatever?
The name of the translator of the manuscript, Frau Dolus, is two Latin words meaning both hoax and fraud.
Liar, liar, motherfucker!
The novel, Michael Crichton's novel, was published in 1976. The University of Oslo, where the manuscript is supposed to be kept, has sent out letters to telling inquirers that they have been a victims of a hoax when they ask about it.
It's based on garbage?
Can you believe it? Okay. Other than that, and the fact that this is one of the biggest box office flops of all time, and that the original soundtrack composed by Graham Revell was and featured... The Dead Can Dance singer Lisa Gerrard was replaced. The score was rejected by the producers.
Oh, could you imagine if it was like a rock ballad?
That would have been kind of cool.
I would have liked that a little bit.
There was a movie that we did where there was a whole... Oh, it was Pet Cemetery.
I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. We did a bunch of songs with themes, though. Could you imagine? Eat the Dead? They Eat the Dead?
What was the name?
The Dead Can Dance.
The Dead Can Dance.
The name of the lady, but what was the original name of the book?
Eaters of the Dead.
Eaters of the Dead.
Eaters of the Dead. They'll come and kill you and take your head.
They did, and they would.
Yeah.
I don't know what song you were singing, though.
I was just making it up.
Of the dead, they'll come and take your head. They don't like you to be in their sheds. Nope, I don't like it.
Non-Sean fact side notes that I would like to mention is, I mean, this does give me sort of Lord of the Ring or Tolkien feels.
Yeah.
It's The Hobbit.
It's worse than The Hobbit. The Hobbit's superior to Lord of the Rings, although Madeline may fight me about
that. But here's the thing. Like, there's this one guy who gets, shuffled into a group where he doesn't really fit in and they, kind of discount him. And then he ends up being like super important to making sure that everything, kind of goes through. But he's like not the king, who's trying to be king. Like, it's about Bilbo, but the plot mostly revolves around Thorin. This movie is about...
Aragorn is Beowulf.
Yeah.
Ahmed is...
No, I was thinking Ahmed was Bilbo.
Ahmed is Bilbo.
Yeah, but Thorin, Beowulf is Thorin. That's the way that I was equating it, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I was making him Aragorn, but that's fine, just because he's the king.
Right.
But also, the story, the Golden Ring is the story we carry within us all along. But all of the flesh eaters are
the gold that was hoarded by the dragon.
I was trying to.
Sorry, Dan. I kind of interrupt you.
Yeah, probably the orcs. The orcs is better.
This Michael Crichton's novel is based on the story of Beowulf, And Tolkien himself has done a translation of Beowulf. That's what the point I was trying to make, is that there is a direct link between Tolkien and the original story for this. And also, if you're looking for, like, how does this relate to Beowulf? Because it doesn't seem like the same story. The Wendels are Grendel, but just representation of, so instead of a group of people, it's one beast. And so the first act of Beowulf is killing Grendel. And in that, there's a scene where Beowulf is pretending to be asleep so that when Grendel comes in, he can catch him by surprise. And he cuts off Grendel's arm.
And they cut off the foot of that guy in that one scene.
Yeah, the bear claw-ish hand thing.
Which, why didn't they smush the fingers out and realize that it was a human hand inside the bear?
Yeah, I mean, there's... yeah.
Play with your dead thing. Figure your shit out.
Yeah. Second scene of Beowulf is to kill Grendel's mother. And we did see that with the...
coral snake lady who wasn't.
Yeah. And then the third act of Beowulf, much later in his life, is that he kills a dragon. And in this case, it's...
the horned guy.
Yeah, the horned guy. And then making the rest of the Wendels retreat. So it's kind of there. And it, you know, this is like loosely adapted so that he could probably make, you know, all the monies.
Yeah.
Well, and there was a moment in while we were watching it that you had mentioned that this could very easily be taken as like the story of Beowulf from a more scientific perspective.
I do like having Ahmed as a objective observer who is not relying on the supernatural. I find myself feeling that way when I watch supernatural shows of any kind. Like, yes, I want it to be spooky. Yes, I want ghosts and vampires. And if I'm watching something just to suspend my belief, that's cool. But if I'm watching something that's supposed to be real, I'm like, guys, there's a draft. You're in a house built before 1990. It's settling. You know, like there's a car driving by. That's not an orb. That's a piece of dust. Like I'm inclined to just debunk things. He's not denying things like, oh, they look chewed on, but he's all like, but they're pretending to be bears. Now I can see that they're pretending through these various things that he learns. I think that's fascinating.
It's very Life of Pi-ish in that you can read the story of Beowulf and find the fantasy in it, or you can read the Crichton version and find the reality of it.
I very much like finding out about a figure that might have been fictitiously represented, fantastically represented. I think when I learn about the sufferings of people and then you put a human twist, like not even a human twist, but you just put up a new perspective on it, I find it fascinating when they're like, and this person who you perceived this way the whole time, but then there's this facet you didn't know. And it's like, oh, they're so much more human now. They're not just this figure in my mind, right? Yeah.
Shall we move on to our shocked and applaudable moments?
Maybe we shoot him out quick, get him done, get you guys back on the road. You're probably waiting in your car for this episode to end, so you can go inside and eat your dinner.
Right. So I'll go ahead and go first. My shocked moment is pretty like weak in a lot of ways. I mean, I know we talked about like, you know, othering different tribes of people and the fact that there's a level of like, you know, culture clash from a very white perspective. Mm-hmm. But like, I was just kind of frustrated that Ahmed didn't get the killing blow. I mean, hearing about the fact that there was, this could very easily be from like a scrivener kind of recounting the tale of Beowulf, it makes sense that he's, you know, the protagonist, but he doesn't like do all of the cool stuff. It wasn't very deep. It was pretty shallow.
No, I agree with that. We did talk about it. We talked a great length about that. We could beat a dead horse, but they knocked so many horses over in this film that like, why would you need to take the time to do? Not that I wouldn't want to hear your thoughts on it.
Right.
But I feel like we gave each other room to speak about it. And I'm sure we're going to pick some other problematic movie and talk about it even more in the future. Right. But I one thing I appreciate about you is that you look for those things and like you're willing to be vulnerable about those things. And that like it sucks when you realize that you've been on the wrong side of an opinion. Like, I don't think that I've never been like, oh, yes, that Lydia who goes out and ostracizes people and murders. Right. That's not you. Right. But like I could imagine and I haven't experienced it that I can recall, but like I feel like from my perspective, like I've been like, oh yeah, I've been making such and such person. Have you heard the term code shifting?
No.
I think I'm saying that right. Code shifting is when, specifically in the context I'm thinking of, is when a black person has to whiteify themselves for a conversation, as opposed to as if they were surrounded by fellow black persons or somebody else who they didn't have to code change themselves around. So I feel like if you were to be a person who became aware of code changing, like I've been trying to be aware of it. Like if I see somebody shift the way they talk to me, like I had a coworker who I was talking to in front of another coworker, and she said to me, "Hey, in front of that guy, don't talk like this." And I was like, "Huh?" Like, because I talk how I talk, however I talk. And a lot of times that gets me in trouble. But like this mouth just goes a lot of the time. And I like to think I adapt, but not always, not as much as I should. But I realized that in that moment, she was giving me a code check change. And I was like, not just trying to help me be more professional, but to help me pass in right. public. And I was like, I bet you. And I get away with it like murder all the time. And so like I think that's something that I recognize and that is something I see and admire in you to recognize, like the other of today, as opposed to the other of this fictional text from Michael Crichton's imagination. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see that.
I like that about you. I admire that. I think you got something in there.
Yeah.
This movie is not good about it.
It's very surface.
Yeah. Do you want to go? You want to hear mine?
Let's hear yours.
My shock moment is the overall pacing and throwaway ending of this film. So it ain't nearly as deep as yours. I was like, there's a lot of, and they walked. And then they give us a little smattering of dialogue that doesn't let us understand a lot of people. Like all of the people whose names I don't know, lost to the wind. I won't ever know unless I look at the credits. But that's just, I mean, like, does that make it less enjoyable? No, that's pretty good. But like, if I were to find umbrage, I would have let scenes land more. I would have let there be a little bit more dialogue, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's not super deep, but like the whole, and then I became a man thing. Yeah. I was just like, I wanted to throw my book. I wanted to be like, guys, no.
Yeah.
End it with like, thanking God, but don't be like, not all my testicles descended.
Bad movie.
Bad movie.
No cookie.
No donut. All right, Jen, what's your shocked moment?
I think that they could have expanded the first 10 minutes into maybe half an hour and then maybe done something a little bit to tighten the ending. So I would have liked to know a little bit more about, you know, this cheating that he's that happens in the beginning and not really
yes,
him, but like
the reason he got kicked out was like the affair with the lady, but we don't know anything except a glance in the hallway.
Right. It's just another throwaway woman character in this movie.
Yeah, Bechdel Meyer had nothing on this.
It is true.
Right.
That may be partially Crichton, and that may be partially the director as well. Director of this was the director of Die Hard, by the way. Not that it
didn't pass the Bechdel Meyer test either, right?
I don't think so.
Okay, we've complained a lot. Let's talk about the awesome things.
Yeah, so my applaud moment was the translation scene, mostly because it has this, like, it uses film language so well, and it doesn't feel like it's, like, you know, kind of, sometimes the way that films or creative bodies are made, it just feels like it's a little bit cagey. Like it's really hard to parse out exactly what the creator's trying to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But with this scene, it's like, this is something very clear. We're going to communicate this to the audience, and we're not going to use dialogue or action. We're going to be using like film language with the way that the camera works. So,
yeah. You knew exactly what was happening in that scene.
Yeah. And it like just thinking about it, it's just like, oh, this makes me feel real good. Feels real good.
Yes. I feel you on that one. I try really hard not to contradict things that I've said earlier in the podcast, but God knows that's not true. Okay. I will say that my whole other rant, my dislike of the stereotypes put on this fictitious, supposed to be the bad guy troop mm-hmm. of people, like as much as I find something to argue with there, one of my favorite things about this film is how they got this Arabic guy, this Muslim guy, and these Nordic guys to just get along. Like, they had a little tough. That guy said that kind of racist thing, kind of that super racist thing about mm-hmm. dude's mom, but dude turned around, called him a bastard, and didn't get stabbed.
Right.
Which is an improvement from this culture we live in.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that it ended with, and now we're friends. It's not perfect, but we're friends. And, like, that's a thing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like it. I mean, it's not perfect. but it's one of my favorite things about this entire film. There's a lot of things that, like, I have questions about that maybe if I knew more about, I would appreciate more about the film. Like, it's certainly the setting is great. You can see they put a lot of money, time, and effort into the crafting, and, like, the casting is decent, if not excellent, except for maybe that they cast a Latinx guy as an Arabic person, and there's only a handful of Middle Eastern persons at all in the entire film.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a problem, but they're not in any Middle Eastern countries for very long at all.
Right.
So then they have all these white guys and, like, the one guy who's brown enough to pass.
Right.
Which in 1999 might be a little late.
Yeah.
I don't know. He won an award, though. And that's weird.
Yeah.
So in the way that my whole life is awkward, I'm sorry, but I like that the Latinx Arabic Muslim guy got along with the Nordic pagan guys at the end.
Sounds good.
Okay. And I'm sorry. And if I hope that I'm open for the spaces I need to learn about that.
Jen, what's your applaud moment?
I really am struggling, but there are things about this movie that I do appreciate. This is not the worst Michael Crichton movie.
I don't know if I could. I don't know if I could name any more.
Jurassic Park.
Congo. Yeah, it is. It has Tim Curry in it.
It had all of the right elements, and then they threw it into the thing to be baked, and it. Did not.
Sometimes your bake doesn't cake. Your cake doesn't bake. Like, you know, you've watched American British Bake Off.
Yeah.
I'm...
Madeline's screaming right now. She's like, it's the Great British Bake Off, Naomi. And you better your showstopper right. Mary's going to kill you. And whatever, Hollywood's going to be mad. And you'll have a soggy bottom. That's all for Madeline. It's her birthday month. Go on.
I would say that this kind of maybe sets a little bit of a precedent in order to get to more fantasy films later on. And this is more in the ilk of, like, Kingdom of Heaven than it is Lord of the Rings, for sure. There's an almost anti-fantasy feel about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is because it's Crichton, and then a part of that is because we're really seeing this from the perspective of somebody that comes from a very scientific culture, a very well-learned culture.
Oh, yeah. He definitely states that he's educated and that he's from a noble family. So he's got his ducks squared.
Yeah. A little, shocked insertion to this really is that I don't think that they spent enough time sort of with the reveal that these aren't real mythical creatures. Like, they could have set up that this is a mythical movie because it's based on Beowulf. Mm-hmm. And then been like halfway through, you're like, these really aren't bear monster things.
Oh, like, and feel free to go back and listen to this one because it's one of the best episodes with Pedro points and everything. But if you go back to Pan's Labyrinth episode, like, the delusions of a child leading up to her ultimate death is what we ended up supposing, I think, really at the end. This was her brain's way of coping all the way to the end, right? What if, in a different sense, this movie had, we explain these things we don't understand with this mythology, you know, they're calling on the name of Odin. What if they were able to even allude to the imagination of these things being more beastly? Because, like, when we see them, we're like, well, that's certainly a guy with a thing on his head.
Right.
That's certainly not a dragon, but actually just a bunch of people with fire.
And we do tend to think of people predating us by so many years as dumb as but mm-hmm. like people are as smart as people have always been. It's just we have a building of wealth of knowledge and we have a bias that we are more intelligent than past persons. And, you know, reading, especially for me, reading like other people's philosophical interpretations, I'll be like, oh no, you are morally more correct than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, oh, there's something for me to learn there. But, like, people are like, I'll never know. Like, how did these people live so primitively? I'll be like, honey, you ordered it off Craigslist. Oh, no, you ordered it off Amazon with your iPhone and you solved your problem. We're talking about people who had mud and sticks and leaves and stuff and they came up with their solution.
Right.
They're smarter than you.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least they're more resourceful than you. And then maybe, hey, maybe even not. Maybe they're the same. We are situationally different. I don't think a person would necessarily see a group of people riding down a hill, hearing hoof prints or hoof beats on the hill would be like, oh, certainly, especially if it's been going on for years. Oh, yes, it's a worm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a glow worm.
Yeah.
And by glowworm, I mean fireworm. And by fireworm, I mean fire serpent. And by fire serpent, I mean dragon, which is what this movie described that as. And I was like...
This is one of those instances where I think it would have been really nice to read the book before doing the podcast, but it just certainly didn't happen on my end. And I would believe that there is an intention within the book of making you feel or believe the Nordic myth before they reveal that it's actually just people.
That would be fascinating.
Yeah.
I would like that a lot. Just like how, like, for like the first part of, and sorry for referencing a Harry Potter thing, super canceled. But like, I was like, oh, I really like this guy talking to Ginny through this, this notebook. And I was like, oh no, Tom Riddle. But I like that reveal. Like, it was exciting for me at the time. But you guys, applauders, look at this. You got our shocked moments. You got our applaud moments. You got our cats and dogs living together.
Mass hysteria.
Where was this energy for the cats episode, Pitch? go on.
Meow. Kitten.
Meow.
Meow. Come on, that's just me trying to get her to meow. She doesn't like it. She does not like that.
Like, I do not perform for you.
Pissy tails for days on that guy. Okay. Hey, applauders. Welcome to the end of episode 25, part 57 of our movie, The 13th Warrior, selected by Madeline, who is eagerly awaiting to read your reviews on Shock Talk, which follows this episode, follows this part of the episode at the end of the month or early next month. That's fine, whichever. But you can leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you leave your podcast reviews. Rating and subscribing and leaving a little comment is super awesome. But you can also email us at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com and we will get those. And if, hey, you might get read on the air. Mm-hmm.
You can also reach us on Twitter at Shocked Applaud. That is also our Instagram name, Shocked Applaud. And on Facebook, you can find us at Shocked and Applaud. And also, if you have time, because I don't want to mention it in the outro, why not check us on Patreon? You can find us on Patreon by searching for Shocked and Applaud, or go to shockedandapplaud.com and click on the little heart icon at the top right of the page.
Hey, Lydia, do you know what happens when you subscribe for $1 a month on our Patreon?
You get our unbleeped episodes.
If you want to hear every f***ing word I say about our f***ing cat, feel free to subscribe. And we hope to have even more fun stuff up there soon. But hey, look, you're looking good. You did a good job.
You made it through the month of May and we are going into June.
You've been patient. You've been kind. No one can ask for more than that, really.
Until next month, this is Jen McQuaid.
My name is Naomi McQuaid.
And this is Lydia Malcolm.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
Congratulations, applauder. You've now completed our review of 1999's The 13th Warrior. We hope you've enjoyed our walkthrough and discussion of this historical fiction action film, and can't wait to bring you another month-long review in June. Looking for more quirky action and horror topics until we return? On Second Watch just released their discussion on how Sean Bean would have died in 1989's Batman. And Nostaljunk Podcast just released their ranking of the top horror movies of 1981. Check out this release's description for links to these amazing shows. Hey, this is your audio engineer and Ain't No Valhalla Batgirl, Jen. Did you know that Shocked and Applaud is scheduling for podcast guest appearances for summer 2021? If you're interested in collaborating on a future episode, you can email shockedandapplaud@gmail.com to schedule a time with us. We'll be taking a short break, and we'll bring you the first part of next episode Tuesday, June 8th. And stay tuned for an episode of Shock Talk with Sean and Madeline soon. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
Odin!
Okay.
There we go.
Now they can go. Valala hi! Valala ha! Valala hi! Valala ha ha!